Hey, Hawkeye fans, a Iowa Media Days edition of the Hawk Central podcast. Mark Emmert and I, in person, a rare in-person podcast, Mark. We are distanced across the table, but excited to talk about 3 days of media activities. At least I'm excited. Are you?
Yeah, it was. Today was quite a whirlwind because we got a depth chart and talked to roughly 36 coaches. So I got to gather my thoughts. I'm still not sure what we just heard today. It was a lot.
It was kind of a whirlwind of activity, as you might say. But we're going to try to break it down the best we can for you. Obviously, we've got some coverage already up for you at HawkCentral.com. But we wanted to kind of boil down what we heard. I love listening to podcasts and hearing it in that form, so I hope you guys do too. Mark, where should we begin? I guess the day began for us with Phil Parker, the defensive coordinator, frankly, I thought he kind of delivered some news out of the gate. He's usually good for a couple morsels.
Really candid. Usually he gives us names of some guys we haven't really been looking at previously.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the case today, but he just came out in his opening statement, and I thought when he said, the best part of his defense is the linebackers. That got my attention, because on paper, that's the least experienced, not just on paper, in reality, it's the least experienced group he has. I really think he was trying to pump those guys up.
Really? So you think it's fake?
I'm not saying he's not happy about his linebackers, but there's no way that's the best part of this team. If you just look at it, it's basically.
Well, he was talking
guys.
About the defense. He wasn't talking about the receivers,
right?
But, or the kickers.
But you got a lot of people coming back in that secondary that are proven, and you got
not a lot.
Jack Campbell and Nick Neiman.
Okay, yeah, that seems to be where the excitement is right now.
Yeah, so I mean,
which
maybe,
is good.
Maybe they are great.
Maybe they are great.
But yeah, my take on it was that I was Phil's way of delivering them like a little boost, and also at the same time. Trying to get his secondary's attention because he said that was the one where he had the most question marks was the secondary.
Mm-hmm.
And I see one big question mark there at safety, but I think those cornerbacks and the other safety are all pretty much known commodities, are they not? What am I missing?
Yeah, you could be right. I like your analysis there. Instead of just kind of articulating what we heard and taking it as truth, you could be right. He could be lighting a fire. We got, 15, 16 days till the first game. They made it very clear they don't know if it's a Friday or Saturday against Purdue yet. You can tell it's annoying them, but they don't know yet.
All of us.
I keep assuming it's going to be Saturday, but the more they mention Friday, you never know. It could be a Friday night in West Lafayette. But anyway, yeah, what I took was they really like Jack Campbell and they really like Nick Neiman. That's what I took.
Yeah, and we know Neiman. He's the one guy that started there.
He has.
The only one.
True. Jack Campbell.
I'm sorry, he did start one game, right?
Campbell, I guess. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. He was limited last year, but
true sophomore, Cedar Falls. He's going to get his chance. So, obviously, he's won that job outright, middle linebacker.
It seems like it, seems like it.
Nick Neiman, which is not a surprise, will be the weak side spot. I still don't think they're going to play a lot of Leo, but apparently that would be Barrington Wade if they do. And he's a guy that's been here for years and hasn't really gotten a chance to show what he can do. So, maybe this is his time.
Yeah. I guess that was notable. I'm going to say that heard good things about Jack Campbell behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
6'5", 243. We talked to the young man yesterday as well. Clearly, there's some excitement there.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see him. Did you notice this too? Both Phil and Seth Wallace, the linebackers coach, talked about just how impressed they were. It's kind of a weird comment, but how impressed they were just walking behind football players.
Yeah, the size, the length.
It's almost like they've got players they haven't had before in their what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I mean Neiman 6'4", Campbell 6'5", Justin Jacobs 6'4". Those are some rangy linebackers. So that's obviously a plus. They're going to get tested right away by Purdue, so we'll find out. The only thing about me with Campbell is when was the last middle linebacker that inexperienced that actually came in and was able to have an impact? I guess Josie Jewell.
I mean, Josie, yeah, but he wasn't like, he was pretty good early on, I guess, that sophomore year.
Because, in the past, stop here, they pumped up Imani Jones. That didn't work out.
That's true.
Christian Welch, who finally did as a senior, but not before that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot to ask of somebody to be a sophomore middle linebacker in the Big Ten. Saying he can't do it or won't do it. I'm just saying,
okay.
To me, that is a question mark, more so than either cornerback spot.
Yeah, so you're skeptical. I'm
not skeptical. I just thought it was odd that he was so went out of his way to talk about how happy he is with the linebackers right now.
Maybe that was also their way of kind of, I don't know, not in a bad way, but just sort of saying they're going to be okay with the opt-out of Jaimin Colbert and the transfer of Dylan Doyle.
Yeah, they were trying to like ease some of the fans' worries.
Maybe.
That's probably the one thing I heard the most about.
Yeah.
The front seven in general, I guess, but definitely the linebacker spots is one of the big questions I always get from fans in terms of wondering how Iowa is going to do this year. So.
Yeah, so fans are most worried about linebackers. Phil Parker, most worried about defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I'm still more worried about defensive line. And that's been my worry the whole time.
Yeah.
And again, I say worry from a perspective of if you want the Hawks to have a good season. And I would say, based on Kelvin Bell's comments, Mark,
mm-hmm.
that my worries are founded, well-founded.
Yeah. He was he was definitely wanting to see it before he believes it on all these guys, except for Chauncey Golston.
Yes, well, there's one.
Yeah, and to me now, I think your bigger concern is the defensive tackles, if I'm hearing you right.
Yeah, other end, though, the other rusher.
Yeah, because now they've moved John Wagoner inside. We're told that Logan Lee is playing both outside and inside. Zach Van Valkenburg might look at the first start over there opposite Chauncey Golston, and then Joe Evans backing him up. But that seems pretty thin. I mean, Logan Lee is a redshirt freshman who was a tight end 2 years ago, right?
He came in as both. I think he's done. Yeah.
And then they said he was injured a little bit last year. I mean, I'm sure he's really impressing them. And Joe Evans, we know, can be an elite edge rusher, but I'm not sure he can play three downs yet. We'll see. Behind them, we don't know.
Exactly.
No other name was mentioned.
Well, I can't remember who said it, but I think it was Phil, that Nixon could actually line up as a defensive end.
Yeah.
So
big defensive end. He's a very good athlete.
He is a good athlete, 6'3", 305. But I could see a defensive line at some point of Golston, Heflin, Schulte, and Nixon.
Yeah.
You know, if they're worried about that end spot, that's what that tells me.
That would be a lot of beef up front.
It would be, but, you know, they want to stop the run.
Yeah, especially it's like a Wisconsin.
That's true. Yeah. That's not a bad point, Mark.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, they might be thinking about Wisconsin here. Yeah.
Because
they are typically undersized against Wisconsin up front.
Yes.
So maybe this gives them a more beef, as you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. That's the last game of the season,
yes.
though. So to get it to mean something, they got to win these earlier games. And it just didn't sound like Phil Parker was interested in blitzing much this year.
Or ever.
So you're going to have to get pressure from those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know if you can. So we'll see. Any names? I mean, Heflin got a lot of attention today, a lot of questions from the Quad Cities media in particular.
Oh, is he from over there?
I don't know what'd you hear about Heflin that you can tell our listeners?
Well, I mean, I thought definitely they like him. Obviously, he's a graduate transfer from Northern Illinois, so he comes with a lot of experience. 6'4", 312, so he's their heaviest defensive lineman. So obviously, I would assume that he's a run stuffer. I can't imagine he's an elite pass rusher at that size, but. It does sound like, you know, it's an adjustment for him. Kelvin Bell said he's his third defensive line coach in 5 years for Jack Heflin, so he's had to learn some new systems, and that'll take a little bit of time. They don't have a lot of time this year. That's one thing that works against him. So maybe it is. I mean, right now he's listed as backing up Davion Nixon at the left tackle spot. Maybe it does take him a couple games to get in the starting lineup, but I still think, don't we all expect him to be a starter at some point?
Yeah, I do. Yep, I definitely do. Yep. And this depth chart we're looking at is a preseason depth chart.
Yeah.
And they were making changes on the fly as we went today, basically.
Yeah.
In fact, that was a part of Kirk Ferentz's opening statement.
Yes. And one person got omitted entirely. So.
Man, that's the one we're talking about. We'll get to that. Yeah. We'll get to the offense. Any other? I guess the other thing I guess we should bring up, and I tweeted this, and it's already gotten some reaction. Kelvin Bell's comments on Davion Nixon. What did you make of those?
Yeah.
So what does he need to do to take the next step? And he said four words, and repeated those four words. Be a better teammate.
Yeah.
Be a better teammate.
Ooh. Yeah, he's...
I mean, those guys... Yeah, go ahead. What'd you think of that?
I mean, it's clearly a very pointed... I mean, it couldn't have been more blunt. I mean, obviously, they're not happy with something in his behavior. And clearly, it's off the field, is what I would think.
Yeah, unless he's...
looked at as a starter. I mean, obviously, they think he's a good enough player.
True, yeah.
And we've seen that he's a good enough player. So, he's had a troubled path here. It's been well documented.
Up and down.
He was in the transfer portal for a little while a year ago.
Yeah, maybe that's why.
Talked in the offseason about maybe opting out because of COVID, then kind of backed off that when we talked to him yesterday. 6'3", 305, a junior. Boy, they really need him to be good. And so maybe that's just what he's telling. I was like, nothing is guaranteed in terms of playing time, but they are trying to get his attention.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Good stuff there. I guess just let's go to the secondary quickly before
that was really interesting, I thought.
The secondary?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of
tell me what you thought was interesting. Yep.
I mean, they got Dane Belton listed as their starting cash and their starting strong safety, and I think...
You can't play 10.
I didn't major in physics, but I don't think you can be both at once. So clearly, they're looking for somebody else to step up at that strong safety spot, is my take on it, and that's somebody else they want to be Kayvon Merriweather, who right now is listed as the backup to Jack Kerner at free safety. So, to me, they've got four guys they really want and like in those spots. Belton at the cash, Hankins and Moss at corner with Julius Brandt is a really good backup there, Jack Kerner at free safety, and then they would love to see Kayvon Merriweather step up at strong safety. Right now, yep. Sebastian Casper, the redshirt freshman, is listed behind Belton at strong safety. So what I wrote and what my takeaway was, he didn't say this, but Kayvon Merriweather was kind of the key there to keeping the secondary the way he wants it to be aligned. No, otherwise,
I think you're right.
You got to move Dane Belton back to strong safety and move Riley Moss into the cash, Julius Brentz into the starting lineup, and then you've got no depth behind the cornerbacks, no proven depth behind the cornerbacks. Terry Roberts would probably be the next guy in there, though. But you really would want three really good cornerbacks going in any season anyway, right?
Yeah.
See. And it seems to me they have them in Hankins, Moss, and Brentz.
I agree. That's why
they can keep him there. Yeah. So that's the thing. Like they definitely we both thought that Dane Belton was really good at cash last year.
Yeah.
And if he could be that for three more years here,
well,
that's a really really huge advantage for Iowa. So
it's such a key position.
It is. It is. And I think it would weaken their defense if he has to move back to strong safety. That's my opinion.
Okay. Okay.
And that's I think that's kind of what I was hearing today too.
You think that's how Phil sees it? As well?
I do think so. I do think he wants him at cash. He said he's good enough to play both. He's really high on the kid, you can tell, and should be.
Belton,
I do think he wants him at the cash if they can pull that off. If he's got he's got enough faith in his safeties besides Jack Kerner.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see when we walk, assuming we get to go to the West Lafayette game, who we see out there with that first string defense.
Mm-hmm.
I will say I took it a different way, which is why these podcasts are
interesting.
Good. I felt like he kind of liked the idea of Dane Belton being more of a signal caller and seeing things in front of him at safety.
Hmm.
And I thought he said, I wouldn't say that was maybe his preference, but I think he wants to get his best five on the field.
Yeah.
I think his best five, I think, are Kerner, Belton, Hankins, Moss, and Brentz.
Okay.
And so I think he mentioned Hankins or Moss could play the cash. I guess I'm not ruling out that we might show up at Purdue and see Matt Hankins is your cash, and he's on Rondale Moore.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and take
your chances out wide with Brentz and Moss again like you did for five games 2 years ago.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen.
Yeah, that's interesting, yeah.
Those would be I think that's what I heard was those are his best five. But I agree with what you said. He wants Merriweather to be. he thinks he has a potential to be in that best five. I think they want to give him that chance.
And that's interesting because if that's if his best five, he really only has five.
Yeah. I mean, there's six for five spots.
Yeah. Right? If you're counting Merriweather.
I'm counting Merriweather, yes.
If not, then any injury is problematic until somebody steps up. He's got a lot of options there, certainly.
That's true. I mean, they could sustain one injury there and move guys around.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. That would be very fascinating.
All right. Let's see. So those were the defensive coaches. Anything else? Names you heard?
That's the thing. We did not hear a lot of names like we typically do. Like, just there's usually like true freshmen that just kind of get their name just kind of gets dropped out there or thrown out there. And I did not hear a lot of names that aren't on this depth chart today.
No.
And part of it might have been the format. Usually we're standing around Phil just kind of informally and
true
asking questions one at a time, you know, just kind of peppering him away. And today he was at a podium and it was a little more limited. I think every year I've been here, there's been like some name that just kind of comes out of nowhere on media day.
Usually from Phil.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like in terms of a true freshman defensive back, and then you're like, oh, okay, now you can know who Phil is excited. Like certainly that was Geno Stone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a few years ago, that was the first time we heard his name. We talk about how he's always around the ball. He'll just always find some way to like mention a guy that he really likes. So this year, all the guys that he likes apparently are on the depth chart.
Okay.
Which is fine if they all stay healthy.
Yeah. No, I actually think they have pretty good depth.
Yeah. I think the secondary is honestly the strength of the defense.
Okay. Yeah. I do think their depth is good, but I just don't know. They don't have a lot of top end guys like they've had, you know.
Yeah. Like the NFL. Maybe having that Epinesa,
maybe. Yeah, I don't know if you see. Do you see a? Yeah, do you see a draft pick on this defense?
I think Hankins would be the closest. Maybe Golston gets there.
Yeah, so that's what I mean. They don't have. It's going to have to be a team deal, I think, this year.
Mm-hmm. I think Davion Nixon has that potential, but obviously, what we heard today is makes you kind of question that a little bit. But.
Yeah. I don't. He probably wouldn't be getting a strong recommendation to NFL scouts at this point, just based on today. Yeah. All right. Do you want to, I guess, next in the rotation then, of course, would be the offensive coordinator, Brian Ferentz. Yeah. And this would be a good time to talk about that.
Yes, that was obviously the topic of the day. We haven't heard from him since the allegations, and that's what you wrote about.
I did write about it, so I know what I think about it, so I kind of want to hear what you think about it, and then I'll kind of share, maybe plug in some holes where about things I wrote.
Yeah, I mean, clearly – I mean, he came with a prepared statement, and he addressed it right off the top before any questions about how hurt he was to hear the things that he heard, how personally he took it, I guess some of the what he called self-reflection that he did as a result, how it's changed him a little bit. I think maybe even humbled him, safe to say. Maybe that's too strong of a word. And really talked – I thought it was interesting talking about how he felt – a bigger responsibility because of his last name. Like basically he's the head coach's son. So that makes it even more imperative that he, you know, behaves properly, around all the athletes. So, I don't know that he admitted wrongdoing necessarily. I mean, I think he said maybe at times he could come across as like a little brash, or I don't know what the word would be, but he certainly did not ever claim to have used a racial slur or done anything racially insensitive. I thought that was interesting. I really think, honestly, my take on this is that this should have been done 2 months ago and should not have dominated today. So I thought whoever was advising Iowa on this media relations campaign, and because you could tell Brian Ferentz wanted to talk about this, he wanted to get it off his chest. So did Seth Wallace. They wanted to get this out there. They've been hearing this all summer long, and only one side of the story has been out there in their mind. And I'm not sure why that did not happen after that Hush the Black Hole report came out. Why we had to wait this long to hear from Brian Ferentz. And, you know, on the same day that we're also asking him questions about his offense.
Right.
It just felt like a really weird jumble of topics there when the racial part of it should have been addressed all at once before this. That's my view on it. Now, how sincere he is, I think that's always hard to judge. He seemed sincere to me, but, you know, how do I know?
Right.
You know, the question is, do the players think he's sincere?
Right.
And that's all that matters.
Yep. That's right. Good points on all that stuff, and I'm glad you mentioned what he said about his last name, because actually I did not include that in my column. I probably should have, but
that's all
right. I'll wrote it in about an hour.
Yeah.
So, sorry, guys.
It's not the last time we'll write about this.
So. No, all great points. I totally agree. It's still, reflecting on that July 30th report, press conference back in Iowa City, it was, you know, same thing. Like, what we're asking Gary Barta about, well, who are these? Who are these?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're asking him about Brian Ferentz, so his name's in the headlines again. It almost isn't fair to Brian Ferentz that they're not letting him talk.
I kind of agreed.
That's what I'm saying. You're saying, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And maybe, if not that day, like maybe a week later, but bring him out. Don't wait till October 8th or whatever day is. I mean, that's just
right.
So long. You wait till your media day for football. mm-hmm. to have your offensive coordinator talking about racial allegations from June.
And what if we wouldn't have had a season? Then when would we talk to him?
Would he have never talked? I mean, I always knew these guys wanted to talk. I think we mm-hmm. both knew that. They certainly wanted to get their story out there and mm-hmm. and their apology or whatever. I mean, he did apologize.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was just I know it's been a different year for everybody, and it's kind of, you know, people are not always in the office or whatever. Like, I don't know how this works, but at some point you would think somebody would have said, you know, Brian, you want to talk? Let's get you on a Zoom call. Let's do something.
Right.
And then today wouldn't have been quite so strange. It was just kind of strange.
Well, it was hovering, and we all, I mean,
you
and
knew
I
it was coming. Yeah,
we yeah, had to obviously. Ask it. Yeah, and you and I both knew it, and we knew, and Iowa had to know it too. I mean, they gave,
yeah, there's no question. So, but we had 20 minutes with him, and you know, at least 10 of it was his.
Right.
Was this?
Yeah, and that's the first time we've talked to him since the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah, at some point we'd want to talk about the offense as well if he's still going to be the offensive coordinator, which he is. But the most interesting thing he said, I think, was what you led with in your column, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is he would step away if he thought he was hurting the program, right?
Yeah, that was kind of part of that. And that was something we had heard, you know, through back channels that, you know, it was contentious, that June 8th mm-hmm. Team meeting. I think that's why it was so powerful to so many people. We had LeVar Woods on our show that, you know, in the summer that kind of talked about that mm-hmm. in specific terms, but just how emotionally charged it was and productive it was. And I think it was good for people to obviously, you know, not only get some stuff off their chest in the minority, but also for, you know, Brian Ferentz to actually, as he said today, say, you know, I will walk away from this program if I'm not going to be a productive part of the solution, if I don't, mm-hmm. if I'm not seen as somebody who can help solve right. what's going on. And so obviously, you know, they think he is. We heard incredibly positive reviews about Brian from players this week. I mean, you wouldn't expect mm-hmm. him to bash their play caller
right.
2 weeks out of the season.
Right.
So, again, take that for what it's worth. But they were... I mean, those were glowing comments. It wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. They weren't brushing off. You know.
Right.
You know. What did Makai say? He's a great man. Something like that.
Yeah.
No, Tyrone Tracy said, "I've never heard him say anything." You know.
Yeah, and I think the fact that these players have all stayed, there's not really been any defections from the current.
That's true.
Players, I think that does tell you something because they certainly had every, you know, excuse to or reason to if they wanted to,
mm-hmm.
And so they have stuck around. So. It's really obviously a really, really tricky situation because we're not behind the scenes. We don't know what goes on there. We don't know, you know, everybody that's made the allegations. We don't know particularly where in that report that came out, his name was not mentioned in there. So we don't know what in that report is referring to Brian Ferentz specifically. So hopefully for the team, this can be put behind them and they can just have a football season now. That's what they all want.
Right. I feel like there was something else I wanted to talk about there, but I was creating my Presto file for the podcast, so that was a bad mistake.
About Brian Ferentz, you mean?
Yeah, on this topic.
Okay.
I don't know. It's. I mean, I thought he was about as good as I've, you know, I thought he was about as sincere as I've seen him on this.
Mm-hmm.
Not on this, but just on.
Right.
Like, I kind of thought he would be a little more standoffish just based on his history, but he obviously wasn't. He was more than willing to answer the questions. Obviously, that's a good thing.
He knew that was not the play today.
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, the thing he focused on was that he does make sarcastic comments all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've heard him say that in press conferences, but, you know.
And we know he has a temper.
Mm-hmm. So basically, I mean, I think basically the difference between him and Doyle from reporting and stuff that we've done and just knowing Brian and Doyle a little bit is that I think there was real issues there with Doyle mm-hmm. among former players. I think Brian is more just a smart ass
mm-hmm.
and he can come across, he knows now, I think that can come across negatively, especially if it's coming towards a player that.
Yeah.
Isn't playing a lot, maybe he doesn't have a relationship with. That's kind of my feeling.
Yeah, I can totally see that. Yeah, that people might not realize that he's, you know, trying to make light of things, maybe, or trying to make a point a little bit different way than his dad would. Yeah. He's also still, you know, he's only 37. He's still relatively young, still a relatively new coach, and he comes from the pro ranks where obviously you would not talk to professional athletes that way.
Yeah, right.
Or because they're all getting paid a lot more than you are. But so, yeah, he's maybe still finding his way, and maybe this is, just a little bit immaturity, and he's learned from it, and things will be, much improved going forward.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about you want to move on to the football part of Brian Ferentz today?
Yeah.
What stood out to you from Mr. Brian?
Well, I mean, he's certainly really, really excited about his running backs. Mm-hmm. He also made a joke about not wanting to bring that up because we all know the history here. And I think he should be. They look like they've got three really good options there, and started including a top-end guy that maybe finally gets him back to that Akram Wadley territory in terms of being a dynamic player, playmaker. There was a lot of positive from him today, actually. I mean, not that he's always overly negative, but he usually doesn't kind of go out of his way. It seemed like he was more willing to praise his players today. Mm-hmm. The offensive line, he had a lot of high praise for. Certainly he likes Petrus, of course, as a starting quarterback.
He likes Padilla.
Yep.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
At quarterback.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was, it seems like we all know this could be an offense that could score a lot of points this year. It does seem like if Petrus is the real deal, this has a lot of talent here. So maybe it's just a matter of that he should be happy about this offense. Like, what's there to nitpick, really?
Yeah.
And so today there was not a lot of nitpicking.
No. And, yeah, that's encouraging because usually he's more guarded on that stuff. And maybe, who knows? Who knows what, just like with the linebackers thing, maybe there's some ulterior motive, there that you're looking at. But,
right.
But yeah, he called the running backs, the three top running backs, dynamic.
Yes.
Dynamic. In Tyler Goodson, Mekhi Sargent, and Ivory Kelly Martin. And one thing, I can't remember who it was. Might have been Brian. But just someone commented, one of the coaches commented, maybe it was Derek Foster, how difficult they are to bring down, three, 4 yards past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that tells me other than is the tackling not as good? Or
linebackers.
Your linebackers, yeah.
No, I do think, but they've all got some size. I mean.
That's true, yeah.
Mekhi's up to 209 now, according to this. They're not tall, but they're all over 200 pounds.
Yep. Goodson, 5'10", 200.
Yep.
Mekhi, 5'9", so 209.
They're pretty compact.
IKM, 5'10", 204.
Yeah, and we have seen that Sargent can be tough to bring down. That's the one guy we have seen, I think, do that. So,
true.
He's probably onto something there. Maybe these guys are physical at the point of contact in a way that Iowa Hawkeye running backs haven't always been in the recent past.
Yeah, and the yards per carry stat we always talk about, and they always fall short of. They really haven't had, I mean, honestly, they haven't had kind of those tough yardage runners other than Torn Young, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
But they never trusted him on an every down basis.
Wasn't fast enough, yeah.
So you wonder what the running game can do. Maybe that they've got potentially, I don't know where to rank this, but potentially their best backfield since LaShawn Daniels and Akram Wadley.
Yes.
In 16.
Yeah. Yeah, because once Daniels graduated, Wadley never really had a running partner that could help spell him.
Except for James Butler, who got hurt.
Yeah, for a few games. That's right. And so I felt like his workload maybe was a little bit more than it needed to be Wadley. So maybe with Goodson, they could avoid that because they've got two other options there to get him a breather at times.
Yeah. So I think be encouraged about that. There was fullback talk, so they're not getting rid of the fullback anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
Deuce Hogan never was brought up today, so I think Padilla's your number two.
Yeah, that makes sense.
QB.
Yeah.
The line that they're going to run behind. Let's get to that now. That was the name that was left off the depth chart. We can get to that in a second. But I thought the starting offensive line seemed to be a moving target all day, to be honest, but from the depth chart what Brian said about – we asked him who would be your starting five, or Tom, I think, asked him who would be your starting five.
Yeah,
and he put someone, he listed three guys for sure, and one of the guys wasn't even listed as a starter. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's such a confusing day.
Yeah.
So he said Alaric, obviously at left tackle,
Linderbaum at center and Coy Cronk at right tackle. That, yeah. Those seem to be in stone, almost.
Yeah, I mean, except for, as you point out, Mark Kellenberger right now is sort of ahead of Cronk at right tackle, but that was
seems to be an error.
And we kind of all expect, I mean, Coy Cronk, I mean, nobody thinks he transferred here to not start and that Iowa got him because they didn't want to start him. So, and you would think at some point he's going to be the guy. He's got so much experience. But, yeah, I think those are the three. And then, obviously, Cole Banwart got left off of the guard rotation. They listed four guards here, and he's not one of them, which I thought maybe was an indication that he's just not 100% from his surgery yet. But Kirk Ferentz said later that was an oversight. I would expect him, honestly, I don't know. I expect him to be a starter. I know I don't – I'm not sure you do, but – I think he'd be fine there at left guard instead of ahead of Cody Ince. And then I still think Kyler Schott. So to me, if that's your starting five, that's a really, really good starting five.
Yeah, even without Tristan Wirfs, I think the addition of Cronk really helps. I kind of think Kellenberger
slides into guard, right?
is maybe your left guard, and then maybe Banwart your right guard.
Oh.
I know you're
– tough break for Shooter.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I don't know. Feel good about the O-line. They got Justin Britt as the backup center there, so that's
a really
interesting.
Good young talent.
Yeah.
When Linderbaum goes pro, he can slide right in.
Exactly. Noah Fenske and Luke Empen also make the depth chart, as well as Jack Plum. So, there's your O-line. I think you feel good about that right now. At least, you know, especially with combined with the running backs. And then, of course, the receivers, I feel like we've been – pumping up all year, and Kelton Copeland made it a point to tell us that we are – he finally said what the Iowa football program has always believed, which is the media is our number one is their number one enemy. Now, why did he say that, Mark?
Oh, just pumping up too many guys. Yeah, yeah, they don't like that. That was specifically, I think, in reference to Charlie Jones.
You think?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think it was his top four. I mean – I don't know why you wouldn't pump those guys up. They've all shown they can do it. His point, I think, was that what promise is one thing, but it's, you got to have production. And the new guys haven't gotten any production. And it's true. I pointed this out. I mean, every year we hype a wide receiver or two, or not just we, but the public, and people get excited about wide receivers. It's, you know, part of the deal. Nothing wrong with that. Sometimes they pan out. Sometimes they don't.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't really need anybody to be on those top four, but I thought it was interesting that Charlie Jones keeps getting his name in the conversation, and Copeland did say he absolutely could get some playing time this year as a fifth wide receiver, which is a good problem to have. I mean, there's nothing wrong with rotating five guys, especially if you're going to go three wide receivers quite a bit, or maybe sometimes even four. I don't have a problem with that at all.
I guess we already know about the wide receivers, but anything that stood out there in terms of what you heard?
Well, I mean, I certainly, once again, Kelton Copeland, just such admiration for Brandon Smith. I mean, he just always, last 2 years, has just spoken so highly of him as a leader and as a young man and as a talent. Obviously, he's a very, very good athlete. And it's clearly that he's the alpha dog on that whole unit. And I believe he was last year as well. And so he's a guy that really, and I think you mentioned this yourself too, I think on the radio show, right, that he's a guy, if he's healthy, could finally have that breakout year that we've been kind of waiting for. I mean, he was on his way last year, I thought. But 6'2", 215, obviously a high jump champion in high school, huge hands, really good blocker.
Yeah.
Obviously, the attitude they want, just seems like he's always has a great attitude about wanting to work hard and be a good teammate. So he is really, really, I think, poised for a big year. And then, of course, Smith-Marset has all that talent, too. I don't know. There's just, I mean, Tyrone, these guys really are all very good. We've seen them play. They are all very, very good Big Ten wide receivers. And I believe they all will have, in a nine-game season, what do you think? I bet they each have 25 catches or more.
Yeah, that's three a game. You would hope so. And talking to Tyrone Tracy this week, he's playing all the positions, so I think he'll be on the field a ton.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird that they don't list three receiver positions in the media guide.
They never will.
they go with that fullback instead. Mm-hmm. So even though Iowa runs three wide more than anything.
Yes.
We hardly any tight end talk, honestly, today. In fact,
yeah. Laporta is your starter.
Yeah, see.
You were right about that. I was wrong.
Yeah, so Laporta you know, got a little bit of pub there from Kirk Ferentz, but mm-hmm. I think they're pretty high on him.
Yeah, yeah, and he looked good last year, and then Sean Beyer, and really, I'm not sure we'll see much beyond those two. We'll see. So I'm sure something will emerge. They'll use a third tight end. I'm just not sure it's going to be anybody that's going to have to be involved in the passing game necessarily.
Yeah, and with Brian being the tight ends coach and so much talk on player mistreatment, et cetera, you know, there wasn't a lot of time to ask tight end questions, honestly, today. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll just show up at Purdue and see if they play three or not. So is it Yelverton? Is it Miamen or even Luke Lachey? So it'll be fun to watch. And kickers might be their best position. And Keith Duncan may not be your starter. What the heck?
That was so funny. I'd like to take that bet if anybody wants to make it. LeVar was just sticking to that line that no job has been earned yet. He was asked about the punter. And Torrey Taylor is listed number one. You pointed that out. There's no or there. It just basically says Torrey Taylor is your starting punter. He said, no, that's not the case yet. So we still got competition going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I asked, well, is Keith Duncan is your kicker, though, right? He goes, no, that's not necessarily. He likes Keith Duncan and Caleb Shudak both. I know they do. Those guys had a pretty good competition last year as well, but you're not benching your All-American kicker. So Keith Duncan, I'm confident, will be the guy kicking field goals again for Iowa this year.
Yeah, I mean, he's proven it in games and been clutch. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you bench him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, silly conversation you even have.
LeVar.
Kick return, I think we know it's Marcet. LeVar mentioned these teams are kicking away from him, but they're trying to devise ways they can still get him, you know, his hands on the ball in that game. And I think he's kind of counting on the bad weather for Marcet to get opportunities.
More returns.
You know, because the ball won't go into the end zone as much. So. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
And then punt return, four names there, two
from last
old
year.
Names, yes, Cooper and Reganey, and then Amir is a possibility, and then Mr. Charlie Jones is the other.
Yeah.
I know which you reported at the Holiday Bowl.
Yeah, and I think he's going to be your kick returner here eventually, too, once Smith Marcet leaves. But, yeah, right now they list Cooper there, Max Cooper. He admitted, though, that's an area they need to get a lot better at. But then he pointed out that Australian punters often kick away from your punt returner anyway, so it's hard to get return yardage anymore. But still, they do have to be better. And Reganey, I guess, had the job for a little while last year. They didn't always like the decisions he made. It was my
I think they liked his return, but
just
let the punts
bounce. Mm-hmm. They didn't like the lost yardage there. So, but I'm sure, you know, he's a young player. They're going to let him learn. So, yeah, I think it'll be really interesting to see if it's one of those two guys or if they really do let Smith Marcet kind of let him loose a little bit. It would not be necessarily the Iowa way that we've seen in the past, to be a little more daring on the punt return and take some risks there. Obviously injury being the biggest risk to one of your best wide receivers.
But yeah.
He's already returning kickoffs, so I guess why not? He wants to do it. He told you that.
Yeah, I guess just overall now, we're going to, you know, prep time for the season, injuries, anything else you heard that was kind of interesting. Do you want to talk about the strength coach? Ray Braithwaite talked for the first time today
to the media, yeah. Been here 15 years already, and so all the players are very familiar with him. I thought the interesting thing was just how, obviously, Chris Doyle is a mentor to him. Was his boss for those 15 years, and he still is very loyal to Chris Doyle, and said he never personally heard Chris Doyle say anything racially insensitive. So he's standing.
That's pretty. That's a pretty significant claim.
I thought so
for a guy
too.
It's been here 15
so
years.
Yeah, yeah. So he was ready for that question, and that's his honest assessment. He wasn't going to back away. Raymond Braithwaite is black. We should probably point that out. That was interesting. But I think he claims the philosophy is kind of the same in terms of, you know, what they're asking for their athletes. He seems a lot more low-key.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so it's I mean, the players all seem to really like him, the ones we asked about. And why wouldn't you? I mean, you almost generally like your strength coach because you're around him all the time and he's helping you get better. Behind the scenes, so Maybe this is a positive development, but maybe it wasn't necessary. I mean, in his view, apparently it wasn't. It wasn't necessary to remove Chris Doyle, is kind of what I was gathering.
Right. Yeah, I bet. Yeah, it's weird. It's just a weird dynamic.
It is.
They're kind of saying like they're not there. Yeah, they didn't necessarily see it as big a problem. Everyone seems to be blindsided by it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet at the same time, they acknowledge that there's things to fix.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it is.
It's kind of an interesting dance that they're playing.
Yeah,
but
a little tightrope walk there.
It's I think they probably feel relief that they're getting some games now, and we get to talk about this stuff.
Again, it was
something that had to be brought up today. It was probably 25% of the press conference, maybe those all these issues.
Yeah,
and 75% football. Yeah. So, it's kind of a I think from here we just keep following this story and kind of focus on football now for the next 9, 10, 11 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
On that topic, as we finish, Kirk Ferentz, we talked to him for a half hour as well. Yeah. Haven't even mentioned Kirk. not real revealing on much.
Which
seems like he's kind of his usual, season's coming faster than I'd like.
Mm-hmm.
I think he thinks they can have a pretty darn good team, though.
Yeah.
I got that sense.
And I agree. They certainly should. Obviously, the questions, as we outline, are mainly on defense right now, but we know Phil Parker's track record, so you got to assume that he's going to get some answers there. And some of these young guys are going to have to play bigger roles, but they recruited him for a reason, so we'll find out. But I like their schedule. I like the way it lays out for them. I think that offense could really be special. I don't see any reason why this team can't at least go 6-2.
Wow, 6-2. Man, it's going to be interesting. I don't know. This is the week I do my game-by-game predictions, the Big Ten predictions, or next week is, I should say, next week. So I have not made final decisions on this
stuff.
Are
we doing one on the radio show Wednesday, or are we waiting until the next
week?
Ooh,
that's a good point. That's a good point.
I don't know if you want
we'll
to
remember.
See. Do you do them on the radio first, then they're in the paper, or do you, is it the other way around?
It's been so long. It's been like 13 months, 14 months.
Look it up. Let us know.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point. Maybe we'll do a fast one this week. It's only 8 games.
That's true, too. Give me a little bit of warning. I gotta plot this out.
That's true. All right. Well, let's start the countdown music. Anything else you want to bring up, Mr. Mark Emmert, before I got to hit the road and get back and watch the Bears on DVR. So, will the Bears win by the time this podcast? Well, no. Will the Bears win when I see the end of it around 12:30 tonight?
Are you asking me?
Yeah, I'm asking you.
No.
Okay. I'm kind of prepared for that, to be honest. I may be fast forwarding through a lot. Anyway, I'm excited to get things going. Appreciate you doing the podcast, Mark.
Yeah, it's fun.
And what's on tap next week? No media availability next week, so we're going to be kind of pushing through a lot of the stuff we heard today, give you guys more context to some of the interviews we heard, and get you guys ready for game week against Purdue.
Coming up fast.
And we should know if it's a Friday or Saturday game, I guess.
By Thursday of game week.
Yeah. We got about 10 seconds left. So, Alaric Jackson looks sleeker and slimmer. And Tim Palasek says maybe he should become a vegan. What'd you think of that?
More attentive in the morning, too.
All right, folks. Talk to you later.